The story of Joseph that's been our subject matter for the last couple of weeks. And Joseph, to me, I would argue, is his life is the best lesson on the concept of forgiveness. We're separated from Joseph by thousands of years, and yet there are so many similarities between the life of Joseph and our life that it's frankly mind-blowing when you think about the level of connection and similarities that we have. Last week, both John and I preached on the idea of forgiveness from the perspective of Joseph, and that is the idea of Joseph forgiving his brothers for what they did to him. And when you, if you're not familiar with the passage, his narrative begins in chapter 37, and it runs through the rest of the book of Genesis, Genesis chapter 50. And the wonder in Joseph's life is that he forgave his brothers, considering all the hardships that he endured because of their hands. And forgiveness, when we look at it either in Joseph's life or when we think about forgiveness in our life, the reason why forgiveness is so difficult is because it's associated with pain. And for some people, great levels of pain. Equally so, the reason why forgiveness is so good is because it can be transformative, not just for how we see our past, but also for our future, and particularly the control that at least we when we think about our future, often when we can't forgive, we're stuck in a past experience and a past event, so that past event controls all of our future. One of the great things about forgiveness, that is forgiving another person, is we let go of all this future control. And so forgiveness as a process helps both our past and our future. Now, forgiveness is possible, and you've heard me preach on this topic often, but I think it follows a process. So this is a little bit of a recap from the sermon I preached last week in the 8:30 service. I've also preached on this in previous sermons. I do commend to you John's sermon from last week on forgiveness. And so if you were not here or if you would like some more information on forgiveness, if you will contact us this week, we'll be happy to send you the links either to John's sermon last week or to previous sermons where he and I have preached on this topic. But the process of forgiveness, that is forgiving another person, it flows this way, and there's levels of overlap. And it begins with, and that is if you are struggling, if you have bitterness in relationships, the inability to forgive another person, the first aspect or the first step in learning to forgive another person, and this would have been what Joseph had to wrestle with, is you have to win the battle of the will. And you have to, most of us that have been around the church for a while, we know what the Bible says about forgiveness. We know what people have preached on forgiveness, have taught on forgiveness. And so often when we hear, do we need to forgive or should we forgive another person, we immediately go to the answers that we've heard. Oh, yes, we should. But when it involves pain and great levels of pain, you have to give the question its proper due. And so if we're ever wanting to forgive another person, the first thing that we really do have to wrestle with is the battle of the will. Do we really want to forgive? And from my own life and what I've witnessed as a pastor and working with people and families in my years of ministry, this is not a question that should be dismissed easily. So the best aid I could give you was to take 6 to 12 months to even consider the question, do you want to forgive? Now, if the answer to that question is yes, then the next aspect or the next step is revisiting the pain that is associated with that relationship. The pain becomes the root that morphs into bitterness. And so often what we do as a defense mechanism is we bury it down. And so it becomes, it's scabbed over. And so at some point we have to pull back the scab because the levels of denial or blame shifting are so great. And sometimes it's out of self-preservation because the pain is that great. But the pathway to forgiveness often goes through the pain of the experience. Those are things that we do. Win the battle of the will. At the same time, we give the pain its proper due. When we do that, then we overlap into what I would call step 3 or the next level of process of forgiving another person is we allow God to take that whole experience, and God intervenes. And I wish I could explain this in the multiple steps that God, how God does this, but the truth is I do not know what they are other than I know the effects of them. Transforms it. God intervenes. And what used to be something that is filled with toxicity, little by little, it is replaced with something else. And this is primarily a work of God. And in the process of how God's Spirit is transforming that experience, that event, we want to also be proactive in creating a new path where for that person who caused pain, pray for them, pray for good things. At the same time, we maybe even serve in their honor. You're wanting to replace where it used to be in your past, where you think about and this experience that's tied to another person, and it brings up so much negativity and toxicity that's associated with that person. As God begins to heal that, you also want to replace that with items that are tied to something that is good. And so you want to be proactive. Pray for God to bless them. Pray for their life. And that's not praying for them to get hit by a bus. That's not it. Maybe even serve. Serve in their name, where you're replacing bit by bit with a new path. And then the last part of learning to forgive another person is when that starts to bubble back up, rework the steps. Because the process of forgiveness is similar to the process of dealing with grief. It comes in waves. And so initially you work the steps and the hold that it used to have on your life, it loosens a bit, and then it comes back up and you rework the steps and it loosens more and more and more. And so finally, it's not that you forget it. It just doesn't have the same control as it once did. It won't erase what happened. It just redefines it. And forgiveness is an independent act of the other person, meaning that it involves the person that wants to forgive and God. Reconciliation are the two parties, the two people seeking a common goal. But forgiveness and reconciliation, they're two different acts. But you can't get to reconciliation without forgiveness. Now, last week, this was the subject matter, looking at forgiveness through the perspective of Joseph and how Joseph forgave his brothers. Today, what I want to do with our time that is left is I want to look at another aspect of forgiveness, not from Joseph's eyes, but from the brothers' perspective. And that is, how do you forgive yourself? This also can be helpful in living. Because if you're in any level of forgiveness, and if you've been in a relationship, if you're in any level of a relationship, and you've been in a relationship longer than 5 or 10 minutes, you know that both are needed for a healthy relationship. Forgiving another person, and at the same time, forgiving yourself. And we talk about forgiving of ourselves, there's really two realities that we have to at least parse in the beginning. And one reality is this: I've done something that has caused another person pain, but either I was unaware of my actions or my intention was not to cause pain. My actions did, but it's not what I wanted. That's not what I desired. I was unaware of the level of actions and the level of pains that are associated with this, and my intention was not to do that. That's different from another reality, which is my actions did cause pain, and I was fully aware of what I was doing. One is my actions caused pain, but my intention was not there, not the same. But there are other times, if we're honest, we are fully aware of what we are doing, which means we are fully aware of our intentions. And they correspond one-to-one with our actions. Now, both of them have pain, but they're vastly different. And so what do you do when that's a part of your life? Because we are in relationships, and we are going to do things that cause pain for another person, or vice versa. So when it's because of you, how do you learn to forgive yourself? Well, seeing the two different realities is very important, because it is easier to forgive yourself even if your actions cause pain, but your intentions were pure, they were not to cause pain, that was not your desire. It is easier for one to forgive themselves in that reality than in this reality. But you have to know at least which side of the spectrum you're on. But regardless of which side, how do you learn to forgive yourself? I think it also follows a process. And the first aspect, and these also are interlocking, which means it's not just you do step one, and then step two, and then step three, and then step four, and everything's going to be fine. It is you're in the process of one, and then sort of that commingles and intersects with another, but it flows. And so I want to tell you about the flow. And the first aspect has everything to do with reflection. The older I become, the more that I think the discipline of reflection is vital for maturity in relationships, for spiritual maturity. And reflection is about you looking inward, not so much about what someone else did. You're looking at yourself, and you're looking at what happened, the action that was committed, and at the same time, the desire behind the action. You want to know. And so you have to come to grips with what happened. Can't hide from it. No excuses, no denial. It's learning to see what happened for what it is. And the reason why that's important is because the power of deflection can be so great. I mean, after all, who really wants to see the reality of their actions? Who wants to come to grips with, yep, I did this. And moreover, I did it, and I know why I did it. And reflection helps us understand this. But reflection has to deal with what's going on inside of you, so at some point, you want to give it a border. You want to give it a boundary. And this is where confession is helpful and critical, because it helps us move from what's in here now to something out here, and it helps us to put our hands around and give it its full place of ownership. And the reason why confession can be so helpful is because it helps limit the spiral, the emotional spiral that's linked to guilt and to shame. Guilt is when the dawn occurs at the first light and you see for the first time what you've done. And shame is where you see what you've done and you internalize it. You personalize it. I don't know if you've have witnessed or seen those commercials that they're called He Gets Us. And there's a number of, I mean, this latest one I think is really, really good. I think there have been maybe four or five. They're a shout out to Jesus, sort of a gospel commercial. But this latest one that I witnessed the other day, I was amazed at it. And the commercial, if you haven't seen it, it's they have these individuals that where English is their second language. And so there's someone behind the camera. You don't see them, but you can hear the voice. And the voice behind the camera says, "What is it about the English language, particularly some words in English, that are hard for you to say?" And so it'll have just interviewed like 2 seconds of one person say, "Well, say, you know, pronouncing words that have the TH sound, that's very difficult for me." Another person says, "Pronouncing words that have the two S's together, that's very difficult for me." And there's just one after the other about words that are hard for people where English is the second language for them to even talk, to use the English language. And then about midway through the commercial, it changes. There's a woman in the commercial. She says, "Oh, you don't mean words that have the TH sound. are the two S's. You're talking about words like, I'm sorry. I was wrong. Please forgive me. She said, yeah, those words are hard for me to say too. Confession. It helps us to put handles. It gives definition to it. It gives it a border of what's on the inside. Because if it's only on the inside, it's hard to hold. But there's something about confession that we take what we're reflecting on and we give it a word. We're now able to hold it. To see it for what it is. It's defined. When we do those two things, then we're open to what I would call this third aspect of learning to forgive yourself, and that is to re-envision yourself as forgiven. Now, if you've owned what has happened, and equally as important, to why it happened, then we do the groundwork that is needed for God to act. And God, through His Spirit, again, I wish I could define it more than this, but God establishes your true self. And you learn to see yourself differently. Not only as forgiven, but as lovable, which are the two things that the New Testament screams over and over and over again. I mean, can you see yourself as lovable, forgiven? I mean, how many of you actually believe that this morning? You know what we do? This is when we think about this between God and ourselves, or maybe even with someone else, we think those two categories, forgiven and lovable, are only for really, really good people. And so often what we do is we engage in a game where we like to present a resume. And what we want is for our resume to be better than other people, particularly when it comes to God. God is not duped. It's not fooled. Actually, the nature of God is even better than what we could ever imagine. Because God simply loves without conditions. And Jesus is the embodiment of that love. But in this idea of re-envisioning yourself as forgiven, there are two additional disciplines that are worth their weight in gold. And the first one is prayer. There are so many dimensions of prayer. Intercessory prayer, where you pray for another person, that's just one aspect. There are dimensions of prayer where God directly, through His Spirit, conveys to you how He sees you. The other discipline, I would call it meditative reading, where you're not just reading the passage for what the passage says, you're reading the passage for what it says, but you want to see yourself in the passage. And this is where the Bible is by far the greatest source. Because that message of the New Testament, now you see it in the Old Testament, but you really see it in the New Testament, it gets conveyed through the text. We grow spiritually much more through our failures than our successes. Now, this is not part of the Genesis sermon series, but if we were to rewind back to Genesis chapter 32, that's a passage where Jacob, who is Joseph's father and the brothers, And he's sitting by a riverbed, and he's out of options in his life, meaning that he's at his rock bottom for all the things that he has done. And they're not pretty. And the only option that he has is to return back through his homeland that is controlled by his brother Esau. And the last time he had a conversation with Esau, Esau wanted to kill his brother because his brother Jacob stole his birthright. And they haven't spoken since. Years without speaking. And so by that riverbank, in chapter 32, Jacob, maybe for the first time, I would argue, comes face to face with all of his failures. That's also the passage where he wrestled, struggled with God. He had to own what he did. He had to own not just his actions, but the intentions that accompanied the actions. It's also there that his name changed, which is very significant. The next day, he tried to bribe his brother Esau, or at least that was the plan before he wrestled. Just a parade of gifts, and the last person in the parade was Jacob. And the desire of Jacob was that if I could tweak it enough and appease my brother enough, then perhaps by the time I get there, he will forgive me. You know how that story ended? Esau forgave his brother years ago. Jacob just couldn't forgive himself until that moment. We grow through our failures, not our successes. And there's something about the human ego that prefers anything, just about anything, to failure, to change, to death. And so often it is our struggles that are the fertile ground for us to grow and to move out of a place of emotional homeostasis or relational homeostasis into something better. And this idea of re-envisioning yourself as forgiven, when we get the who I am question right, then all the what should I do questions tend to take care of themselves. In spiritual maturity, it is neither offensive nor defensive. It is finally able to accept the reality as what it is, and that become the starting point, which then allows God to move us into a greater place of wholeness. Joseph's brothers had to see themselves as forgiven by Joseph. Chapter 50, 17 years after Joseph already forgave his brothers, sought reconciliation with them, provided for them and their families, moved them to Egypt, gave them jobs, established their families in a place of wholeness in Egypt, and yet they're still living in the past because they couldn't forgive themselves. And time by itself will not do this. Just as time by itself will not forgive another person, time by itself does not help us forgive ourselves if we're not working through the process. But now, if we are, time becomes one of our greatest helpers. But without it, you can be 1 year, 17, 50 years, and still be stuck in the past. What's unfortunate is that in Joseph's life, and even inside of his family's lives, both of them had to learn to forgive each other and also to forgive themselves. And the same is true for us. You cannot be in a relationship longer than 30 minutes without both of these. They're that vital.